You're listening to Louisiana Insider, a superlative guide to a great state's destinations, hosted by Errol Labor, executive editor of Louisiana Life magazine.
It's our Louisiana song. It's our favorite melody. It's our Louisiana song. Hearing it echo through the cypress tree.
Looking for live music in Acadiana? Check out Lafayette Weekly, a listing of live music taking place in and around the Hub City, along with a curated playlist featuring local acts. Visit LafayetteTravel.com/Lafayette Weekly or follow along on Spotify at Lafayette Travel to see who's performing in Lafayette Parish.
Hey, our topic today has got to be one of the most popular topics in Louisiana, and that's the crawfish. And this is a guy who knows a lot about it. This is Sam Irwin, who has written a book called, actually, this is his return to the show. Well, been in once before to talk about this, but he's written a book called Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. Sam, let me begin by asking him about the difference between a crawfish and a lobster. I mean, other than size, are they of the same species, the same family, or did nature make a mistake, or how did this happen?
Gosh, Errol, I didn't know this was going to be a science test today. I would guess they must be of the same species. They're all crustaceans. Lobsters tend to be saltwater. I know in the Caribbean, when they catch lobsters, they're smaller than those northeastern Maine lobsters. So in the Caribbean, they call them crawfish. So you have to be careful when you mention crawfish.
But our crawfish really aren't in the water, are they? I mean, they're not, so aren't they down like in mud holes and things?
They burrow deep in underground, and they won't release their babies until they know they have water above them.
All right. How nutritious is a crawfish?
How nutritious is the crawfish?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, I'm told it's low in fat, even though we eat the fat that's on the crawfish, but the fat is really the liver. But that's about the extent of that. I just know it tastes good, but it's low in fat as well.
Now,
so you have permission to eat as much as you want, Errol.
Oh, and believe me, a lot of people take advantage of that permission. When did... Okay, I guess crawfish have been in here as long as there's been a Louisiana, as long as there's been a state. But when did the crawfish thing really become popular? Like 50, 60 years ago, I mean, people weren't doing crawfish boils. Something happened that made crawfish really popular in Louisiana.
Well, 50 years ago, the industry was still in its infancy. They were learning how to... make the ponds and that could produce crawfish, but they were peeling crawfish for restaurant use, for etouffee. All the Piccadilly restaurants had etouffee. The Don's chain, they had Don's in New Orleans, Lafayette, Beaumont, Morgan City, Baton Rouge. So they were all using crawfish. But the thing is, there wasn't enough crawfish supply to have the big boom in crawfish. Nowadays, you know, back then they probably had, in the early 70s, maybe about 40,000 to 100,000 acres of crawfish ponds. And that wasn't really enough to supply the demand that they've created for it. So
what happened to create the big boom, to create the demand?
That happened, well, of course, there were things that were, people enjoyed crawfish, they wanted crawfish, and they were delicious, as you know. The crawfish buyers in, let's call it the Atchafalaya Basin parishes, St. Martin, Iberia, Assumption Parish, where Pierre Part is, they had been producing crawfish mostly from the swamp, but the swamp crawfish only came in if the water conditions were right, if there was available labor to go out. So LSU started developing, doing research on it. And by the late 70s, early 80s, they pretty much had the idea of this is the blueprint of how you grow, how you build a crawfish pond. And they brought it to the rice farmers out in Acadia Parish, St. Landry Parish, Jeff Davis Parish, that's, and Vermilion Parish, that's where they grow a lot of rice. The rice farmers weren't too interested in crawfish pond culture at that time because they were getting a good price for rice. But the price of rice, the bottom, the market dropped out in around 1984. And so the rice farmers began to look for another way to supplement their income. And that's when farm production started. The rice farmers began devoting some of their land to crawfish farms. And really the crawfish pond acreage exploded. It went from, you know, about 40,000 to 120,000 by the end of the 80s. Today I checked with Greg Lutz, who is the aquaculture research specialist at LSU, and he estimates there's about 325,000 acreage in ponds right now.
So crawfish and rice use pretty much the same sort of environment to grow, kind of a, in ponds, a watery environment. So where rice grows, if you do it right, crawfish can grow too.
Well, today, maybe early on, they kind of did that. A rice farmer had grew rice in it, and there's always kind of a stubble left over. And he might have just left the water in the pond and left it for the crawfish, and the crawfish would eat that rice, but he'd also be catching the crawfish. But today they don't do it. They pretty much don't do it like that. Rice is a separate crop from the crawfish crop. They grow rice in certain fields, and then they'll just grow crawfish in a different field. And it's a completely different agricultural process, although it seems the same. They both need levees and they both need water. So, but it's a different process. They treat it differently.
So there's a difference between the swamp crawfish and the rice pond crawfish?
Well, one researcher told me that he thought the taste of the free current wild crawfish were better than a crawfish raised in a pond environment. But I would think we would need further research on that. You know, we probably need to have a crawfish boil where we have a sack of wild crawfish and a sack of pond crawfish and see if we can taste the difference.
Well, that sounds like a great objective. I mean, it sounds like the way to spend your time, I guess. When did the crawfish boil become popular? Like before this, when people were going after crawfish, they were using it mostly for stews and for that kind of thing. Did this new technique open the way for the crawfish boil?
Not so much that. I think it was a matter of necessity. The Chinese imports began coming into the crawfish market somewhere in the late 80s and put a lot of pressure on the crawfish processors. And the price of the Chinese imports that was coming in undercut the domestic production a whole lot. And so it knocked out a lot of processors. I mean, it was hard to compete if you're selling a pound of crawfish in the late 80s for $10 a pound and a Chinese importer is bringing it in for $5 a pound. People are going to pay attention to that. So that put pressure on the industry to figure out ways to deal with their crawfish. And so they started they started promoting crawfish boils, and there were other markets for it. Other little niche markets were created. You've seen a boiling stand on the side of the road where it's just some boilers mounted on a trailer, and or maybe just a grocery store has got some boilers out in the back, and they start boiling crawfish themselves. Well, naturally, the Chinese couldn't bring in boiled crawfish from overseas, but so we started promoting those kind of ideas, and we began to use all of the live crawfish that we had. Rather than send it to the processing plant, we sent it to the people that were boiling it, adding value to the crawfish, you know, boiling it with potatoes, seasoning it up, putting it in a 3-pound bag and selling it. And that became very popular. I mean, you don't have to drive very far in New Orleans or anywhere in Louisiana to see that somebody's selling boiled crawfish in a little shop, in a parking lot, on the side of the road, or in the back of their grocery store.
Yeah, or even, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I was in one of the supermarkets, and it used to be if you went to crawfish, you went to a seafood place, you know, that sold fish and things like that. But now it's a very common thing, a big display of people selling boiled crawfish.
It's isn't it amazing that you see it everywhere? It's ubiquitous. And pay attention to how many times you see a crawfish on a sign. You know, I used to see New Orleans style this, New Orleans style that, New Orleans style this, all over the place, you know. But now I everywhere I look, I see a crawfish marketing sign somewhere, you know, especially out in Western Louisiana, the crawfish emblem is everywhere.
So the emergence, this is the kind of history stuff I like, where one thing connects to another, okay? The emergence of the crawfish boil and the growth in popularity had to do with the growth of the Chinese import as a way of counteracting that. The Chinese import is just pretty much frozen crawfish that you do to make a net touffee or something.
Right? To me, Errol, the Chinese, frozen Chinese crawfish edged out the fresh peeled Louisiana tail meat market. There's still a fresh Louisiana tail meat market, and that is bought by people who just have to have a fresh pound of crawfish like me. I won't eat frozen crawfish. I don't care for frozen crawfish, even if it's domestic or Chinese. But the Chinese market edged out the Louisiana fresh tail meat market. So the growers had to figure out a way to be able to market live crawfish better.
And, if you were making an etouffee at home,
yeah.
All right, you wouldn't go to a store and buy a bag of Chinese crawfish.
Right? Not me.
Uh-huh. Okay. But there are bags of fresh Louisiana crawfish.
Yeah.
That you buy.
Yes. I would buy the Louisiana crawfish anytime. I wouldn't care how much it cost.
Okay. And of course, when we're talking about boiled crawfish, there's no contest. That's all there is the Louisiana crawfish.
Pretty much, yeah. But how much can the market handle of live crawfish? I mean, we've got in 2019, according to the LSU Ag Summary, they were making 151 million pounds of crawfish in a year. That's a lot of crawfish. But that was only with about 250,000 acres. So this year, I'm told there's 325,000 acres. That's going to produce a lot more crawfish than just 3 years ago. So where is it going? Can New Orleans eat that much crawfish?
Yes. Okay.
You get your share in there, Errol?
Just the Jazz Fest alone is a major purveyor of crawfish. In fact, my theory is that the Jazz Fest is one factor that had to do with popularizing boiled crawfish. Because I think it opened up to people who like, you know, who were just going to hear Deacon John or something that really hadn't had crawfish, but all of a sudden they saw that. And I think that made it popular. But yes, it's really popular. And now it's available in so many ways. Like I say, you can go to the supermarket, you know, and walk in and get it. And so you don't need to go to a seafood market anymore.
Well, that was one of the things that, that now around here, someone, I think the first one, they called it a crawfish patio, Richard's Crawfish Patio down in Abbeville. And they had been specializing in serving boiled crawfish during the season, even in the early 60s, late 50s. So there was a model that was being created. You know, a nice restaurant might not like to serve boiled crawfish because it takes too long to turn the table over. It's messy and it makes a really strong smell in the restaurant. It takes time to turn the table over. But they created these crawfish patios, these little crawfish boiling restaurants, you know, where it might be you order inside the little building and then eat outside on a patio. So they created that. So that was a unique thing to Louisiana, that that kind of thing happened. And then they found that people were willing to buy a 3-pound bag of crawfish and take it home with them, or buy as much as you want and get it scooped up and pre-boiled and everything. That saves a lot of effort.
Absolutely. We're talking to Sam Irwin. He has a book called Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. I've talked one time, I remember, with a kid to a relative who recalled that when he was growing up, there'd be some crawfish. It was mostly crawfish that was just driven out by high water, if not they're going out together. So they gathered the crawfish, they put it in a pot, and all they had was salt. I mean, and so the original crawfish, you put the crawfish in the pot and you boil it in salt, that was it. When did this whole seafood boil thing become a factor?
It seems to me, as I was a kid growing up, there was always that little Zatarain's crab boil pouch.
Yeah.
You remember that? You know,
it's still there, yeah.
Yeah, and still there. And you'd put that in the water, and then you'd add boxes of salt, red pepper, and maybe some black pepper. So that's kind of what we did. But as this whole crawfish industry has evolved, it's created a whole other little market of things that you need to boil your crawfish properly. So you can go to a store, and I think there's two brands, the Zatarain's and Louisiana Fish Fry. They have pre-packaged seasoning mixes that you can just buy, and it'll give you instructions. If you're boiling 20 pounds, use this much and pour it in. And so that whole little market is another little market that was created. Tony Seafood here in Baton Rouge, they're the ones that originated Louisiana Fish Fry. They have a big factory behind their seafood market where they just package their seasoning mix. And I'm sure Zatarain's has something similar as well. So that whole little market developed. Before that, you just added salt and pepper to your liking. And then people started putting in all kinds of stuff, corn and potatoes and onions. And I don't know, I've even heard people put pineapples in there. So if you like to eat that stuff at a crawfish boil, have at it. But I'm going to stick with the crawfish.
Well, let me tell you, that's absolutely true, because I was actually asked to be a judge of a crawfish boiling thing one time. They had maybe 20 different competitors, and some of them put pineapple in. I never heard of it before. It was good.
Yeah.
Because, you got the sweet taste of the pineapple counteracted by the salty thing. It's a perfect complement to the crawfish. And then, of course, the sausage and the potatoes and a little garlic. Ain't nothing wrong with garlic in there. I mean,
yeah.
At some point, you don't even need the crawfish. Okay? You just need the other stuff that's in there with the boil.
Well, I want to eat the crawfish, Errol.
I understand. Let's get to the major question, the thing everybody wants to know. Do you suck the heads?
I'm not a fan of it. I'm just too busy peeling the tail meat out of the shell. So I don't. I'm not a fan.
Okay. Well, let me urge you, if you've never done it, to try it. Because that's a whole wild flavor there. That's a whole other thing of flavor that you got in. You know, and a real crawfish eater can do it with almost like one gesture. They get the crawfish, you know, they peel off the head, they squeeze out the tail, they suck the head, and then they eat the tail, and then they go, and then it's a flow, and it just goes on and on.
So you are you throwing a challenge down, Errol? Like
I'm just urging you, okay, that it's, that you're missing something, not to do it. Of course, having a cold beer nearby helps also. So,
well, look, Baton Rouge is only an hour away from New Orleans. Next time you have a boil, we'll pop over.
Okay. Well, they boil crawfish in Baton Rouge, don't they? It's not just a New Orleans thing, is it?
I'm sorry. Say it again.
Do they eat boil crawfish in Baton Rouge?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we've got at Tony Seafood, which is on Plank Road in North Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
During the Easter week, they need 3 sheriff's deputies just to direct traffic over there.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, I read somewhere, I think it was like an introduction to your book. And they talked about the religious significance of crawfish too. That it does tend to coincide with Easter and the fasting and the no meat thing. And so if you got a half penance, there's nothing wrong with crawfish.
I think it was a big boon to the crawfish industry. Doesn't seem like too much of a sacrifice, though, huh?
No, it doesn't. My dad used to do fried oysters for Good Friday. That was his penance. So anyway, how did Bro Bridge get to be the crawfish capital of the world?
Well, that's a fun story. Some of it had to do with politics, and some of it had to do with just noticing what other towns were doing. But it was the centennial, it was the anniversary in 1959 of Brobridge's incorporation as a town. And there were some civic leaders that recognized that and said, let's have a celebration. And we'll put crawfish as the feature. But crawfish in Brobridge had long been a popular dish. You remember that movie? Well, I mean, you know that there was a movie filmed about Evangeline in the 30s in the St. Martin Parish area. Dolores Del Rio, I think, was the actress. And she was here. And when they premiered the movie, they had a big crawfish bisque dinner on the banks of Bayou Teche, right there near St. Bernard in Brobridge. And that was in all of the local newspapers. And so, you know, we've got people eating, records of people eating crawfish in the 30s, in the 20s, even, you know, into the 40s. So crawfish was a dish that was...
Well, it wasn't boiled crawfish, it was some kind of prepared crawfish dish.
Yeah, it was a crawfish bisque type dishes. And but anyway, a school administrator, her name was Annabelle Hoffman, and she promoted the idea, let's have a centennial celebration. And we had a state representative named Robert Angel, Bob Angel, everybody called him. And he got a state resolution passed in 1959 that in conjunction with the Brobridge Centennial, Earl K. Long signed a resolution proclaiming Brobridge the crawfish capital of the world. And then we got Earl K. Long to come to Brobridge for this centennial celebration. And there was a party and there was a parade and fete aux dos and things like that. And everybody had a good time. And they said, well, this is celebrating the town and everybody here loves crawfish. Let's promote Brobridge and let's promote the crawfish. So that all happened in 1959.
I know Louisiana.
We have a political degree. I have a document that shows that Brobridge signed by the governor, Earl K. Long.
I know governors in Louisiana are historically powerful, but only a Louisiana governor could be so powerful as to declare something to be a capital of the world. Okay, I mean, you know.
Well, you know, who was there to dispute it? Nobody else nobody else was celebrating crawfish.
Yeah, see that? And they've parlayed that into a big festival every year. It did.
And for a while, it was every 2 years that they would have a big festival. It quickly got out of hand in downtown Brobridge, though. The merchants would take the panes of glass out their front windows and they would sell beer. There would be street dances for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and the streets would just be packed. And it kind of got out of hand. And there was some conflict between the people that lived downtown, and then the emergency services were always concerned that if there was something serious that happened, they wouldn't be able to get emergency care in there. And I forget what year it was. I think it was somewhere around 1988 that they stopped having the Crawfish Festival downtown. Mm. It's in the book.
That was like when they stopped the parades in the French Quarter during Mardi Gras. It was the same sort of thing about the, you know, the emergency people worried about it.
You have some people estimated about 100,000 people would come into town. I don't think it was really that much, but the whole downtown area, the streets were packed, and there was bands playing French music on every corner. And CMOS Pharmacy always had the best band and the best crowd, and they had their crawfish merchandising down to an art.
I might be wrong about this, but isn't the bridge in Brobridge red?
No, but they do have a, it's one of those drawbridges that are fairly common. You see them on Bayou Teche and Bayou Lafourche a lot. It's painted silver, but they recently refurbished it, got a new paint job, and there's a big picture of a crawfish on top of it. It's talking about Brobridge as a crawfish capital.
The states surrounding Louisiana, like Texas and Mississippi, are there much crawfish there?
Well, there is a market in East Texas in the Beaumont area where people are got crawfish ponds and they're growing crawfish ponds. And Houston is a big market for live crawfish, and they boil their own crawfish there. Dallas as well, and the interesting thing about crawfish, this Louisiana crawfish, is it can be pretty much grown everywhere, but you have to be careful with it because it will push out the native species of crawfish. So I'm thinking if somebody wanted to have, and there are some crawfish ponds in North Louisiana, but I'm thinking if somebody wanted to put crawfish ponds in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, they very well could.
So in Houston, are they eating native-born crawfish or crawfish imported from Louisiana?
Oh, I don't think the Texas market is big enough to be able to supply the crawfish that that the Houston consumes. It's, most of it comes from Louisiana.
Okay.
You got to understand that the biggest crawfish producing state parish is Jeff Davis Parish, and that's only maybe how far is that? 2 hours from Houston, I'm guessing. Maybe a little more than 2 hours, but you know they bring crawfish to Houston markets all the time.
Hank Williams, in his song Jambalaya, made popular, you know, the phrase crawfish pie.
You filet gumbo.
But I've never seen crawfish pie. I mean, it's a jambalaya, crawfish pie, filet gumbo. Have you ate crawfish pie?
Yeah. Usually at Pat's restaurant in Henderson, if you order a crawfish platter, they'll give you a little small sample of a crawfish pie. It's usually a real sweet, flaky pie crust, and there's a depending on different ways how you make it, but yeah, it's delicious.
Okay. Do you, the future of the crawfish industry, is it growing? Is it peaking? Or is the sky the limit? What's going on?
Well, I was talking to a crawfish farmer yesterday, and crawfish farmers are basically, a lot of them are rice farmers, but they need to farm crawfish in order to make ends meet. So crawfish is an integral part of what a rice farmer does. So can it expand? It probably needs to expand beyond Dallas and Houston and Atlanta, maybe, because those are markets that regularly take crawfish. So they're trying to, but it's a long way. I mean, crawfish, you catch crawfish on Friday, you can get it shipped somewhere on Saturday and have a boil. It remains to be seen, Errol. You know, would the Wichita, Kansas people, would they want to embrace crawfish? I don't know.
Yeah, I hope not. Let's keep it kind of local a little bit. So anyway, all right. In addition to being an expert on crawfish, you're also an expert on jazz, aren't you?
A little bit on jazz. I won't say I'm expert status, but I'm knowledgeable. Yeah.
But do you have a book that you're working on about jazz?
I have a new book out right now that's called The Hidden History of Louisiana's Jazz Age. It just came out in January.
And can you give us a hint as to what is hidden?
Well, for one thing, you know the song Basin Street Blues?
Sure.
I mean, it's an anthem of New Orleans. And when Spencer Williams wrote the song Basin Street Blues, New Orleans did not have a Basin Street at that time. He wrote the song in 1928. In 1922, New Orleans City Fathers changed the name of Basin Street to North Saratoga Street. The reason why they were changed the name was Basin Street was the edge of the Storyville district, where the houses of ill repute were. And they were embarrassed by all of the stuff that Storyville had done. And I think they changed the name in an effort to keep visitors. There was a railroad station right at the end of Basin Street and where it meets Canal. And I think they were trying to discourage people from out of town, people, railroad men, salesmen, drummers, from going to Basin Street and loitering around and looking for the houses. So they renamed Basin Street and called it North Saratoga Street. And so I explored why they did that and how did it get changed back to Basin Street in 1945. That's a little hidden gem that I think most people don't know.
Well, that really isn't. So it didn't become Basin Street until 1945?
Well, it had been Basin Street ever since the beginning of the city, but it stayed in 1922 to 1945, it was named North Saratoga Street. But because of Louis Armstrong's fame and popularity and being a son of New Orleans, some enlightened progressive members of New Orleans society convinced the city to change it back to Basin Street because the town was now famous in song and rhyme, but there was no Basin Street in Baton Rouge in New Orleans.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know what else happened in 1945? It's that World War II ended. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's significant, at least in Europe. Well, because there was a lot of people that wanted to have fun after that. Okay. There were people celebrating and things opened, and it was like as people recovered from Katrina in New Orleans, people wanted to do new things and that. So, and I think there was a real, I think that was part of the movement of the times, let's get back to the city that we were and have fun. Just a thought. That's a really interesting theory. So from 22 to 45, it was called Saratoga Street.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't write no blues songs about North Saratoga Street.
So did the song exist at all during that time?
Lewis recorded it. Lewis Armstrong recorded it several times. They had a big concert at at the Municipal Auditorium, there was an organization called the National Jazz Foundation, and it was basically based in New Orleans, but they were the force behind it, and they got this. They had a big concert, and they got up there and said they brought Bunk Johnson in to play with Louis because Bunk was promoting the idea that he was one of Louis Armstrong's mentors, and they said, "We're going to give Basin Street back its name," and just like that, they had a city resolution passed, and they did it again. But Basin Street Blues was a very popular song in the first half of the 20th century. It's like the 70th most recorded song in the first half of the century.
Okay, so this is your book. Your book came out in January. What's the name of it again?
It's called The Hidden History of Louisiana's Jazz Age. And it's from the same publishers that did my Crawfish book, History Press. They're based out of Charleston, Carolina. They're also the owners of Pelican Press. So it's a good company. They do a good job in marketing. But the Hidden History of Louisiana's Jazz Age. And I will be speaking at the East Baton Rouge Parish Main Library on Wednesday, March 15th. So I'm not sure when you're going to publish this this one.
Oh, this thing's on the web. People will be listening to this.
Yeah.
Well, 20 years from now. So anyway, okay. Well, great. Well, you're living a good life with jazz and crawfish. You know?
I've had a career of having fun, Errol.
Yeah.
Think just like yours.
And then plus you got the band and you can do the...
play music. We play music. I got my horn right there. You want to hear something?
Sure. Yeah. Why not? This will be the first time I've hit music. Okay.
Did y'all get that?
Yeah, it's a little bit.
This is a 1947 old special.
Okay. And what was the song?
That's I thought I heard Buddy Bolden say that I played.
Okay. Let's great. Okay. Let's get you back and we'll talk about the hidden history. I think it's fascinating.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, you have lots of crawfish this season.
Well, Errol, eat more crawfish. That's all we can do.
Okay. And again, this is Sam Irwin. Book is called Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. It's published by, what's it called, History Press?
History Press, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're the same people that publish these other books, you see, like about specific topics, you know, like a book about Metairie, Louisiana, or a book
sure,
about,
yeah.
Yeah, now they own the Pelicans. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Thank you for the musical entertainment.
Enjoy being here, Errol, anytime. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Looking for live music in Acadiana? Check out Lafayette Weekly, a listing of live music taking place in and around the Hub City, along with a curated playlist featuring local acts. Visit LafayetteTravel.com/Lafayette Weekly or follow along on Spotify at Lafayette Travel to see who's performing in Lafayette Parish.
Thanks for listening to Louisiana Insider. Subscribe, like, and rate our show where you listen to your podcasts and follow us on social media at Louisiana Life Mag. Executive producer for Louisiana Insider is Kelly Massico in cooperation with Louisiana Life Magazine. For subscription information to Louisiana Life, call 504-828-1380. Our theme music was provided by Rich Collins. Hey, that's me. Join us again next week for more discoveries inside Louisiana.